Okay, we're talking with Matt Palumbo. This is this episode's going to be called A Chat with Matt, and it's Matt Palumbo. Welcome to How to Be Tom Shalhoub. Here we go, Matt.
Well, thanks for having me on, and I'm looking forward to learning how to be Tom Shalhoub.
Yeah, it is a learning process.
It's a learning process.
Hello?
I don't even know what this episode is. This is a chat with Matt, but yes. You know, every episode is another, it's another chink in the armor, how you can be Tom Shalhoub. And I guess if you want to be Tom Shalhoub, you have to talk with guys like Matt Palumbo. I mean, that's really the essence of it. So
my parents asked me, like, what are you and Tom going to talk about? And I'm like, every time I'm on a show, I'm like, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah, no, I leave it way up. And obviously you can roll with the punches. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I wanted to speak with you today. I thought we would do a couple of things. I have a couple of things in my head, but if you have anything you want to talk about, just launch into it and then away we go.
Sure.
But I thought the first thing that'd be interesting, just to kind of jog your memory and see if you remember or how you remember the whole Mike Cernovich incident on Red Eye. Because I've never talked to you about it. Mm-hmm. I never talked to Mike about it. I never talked to anyone about it. We did Red Eye. The Mike Cernovich incident happened. Mm-hmm. It was one of those bizarre things. Mm-hmm. Then it just, I just kind of went and did my show again the next day. Yeah. Everybody moved on. The whole world changed and everyone seemed to forget about it, but I didn't forget about it. And so I'm wondering what you remember about it. Because I knew of Cernovich. I was kind of following him online at the time, but I was very busy. I was hosting Red Eye, you know, but I would kind of go on to Twitter and I would see Cernovich and then I would kind of read some of his posts on his, you know, guerrilla mindset blog or whatever it was. And I said, oh, well, this is an interesting guy. Mm-hmm. And then you recommended him to Red Eye. You put us in touch with him. We booked him on Red Eye. And then tell me your impression of what happened after that.
Well, I'll give some setup. So it was, I think I recorded my first Red Eye episode early in the week. And I think it was either the day or the day after. And it was an episode where I think we were recording it ahead of time for some reason. But anyway, so like the next day I'm at a bar in Manhattan with some friends and Mike Cernovich is there. So of course I think I didn't know who Mike was, but I think one of the people in my group knew Mike. So I think that's why they invited me. So anyway, I ended up talking to Mike for a while and we exchanged numbers and info. And then a few days later, someone from Red Eye asked me, like, you know, after I was on the show, like, hey, you know, we're always looking for a new guest. You know anyone? And I just said, well, funny you ask. I just met this guy at a bar the other night. He'd probably
that's
be
funny.
Good. So I remembered, you know, you guys had him on. It went really well. And then I guess some guy at Vanity Fair wrote a hit piece about him. And then there was like a black hole where me, Gavin, him couldn't go on Fox for like 6 months.
It's really something, right? So that is so fascinating. I didn't know, though. I wouldn't have said.
Well, I remember, too, you messaged me, I think maybe it was 6 months after. And the first thing I did was apologize for the whole situation. And you were like, oh, I didn't even know it was I think they didn't even tell you or anything. So I was going to then come back on Red Eye, I think, after that kind of blew over, but then the show ended, so it didn't really go anywhere. But
yeah,
it was it wasn't the end of the world. It was just unfortunate in that they asked me for help finding someone, and then they were thrilled with the guest, and then it blew up afterwards. And I don't know. I don't see why anyone should care what a Vanity Fair guy has to say, to be honest. So,
well, that's it. But I think that certain people, and I mean, it almost, people pretend it doesn't happen today, but there are certain people in media circles that kind of stick together and they all kind of play on the same thing. It wasn't actually Vanity Fair. Let's look because I have the, I'll show you what it was.
It was kind of like, why did Red Eye have on a rape apology? It was something absurd, like that kind of title.
Let's do it. It was Daily Beast. Is that Vanity Fair?
Beast. You're right. You're right. It was Daily Beast.
Okay. Daily Beast is kind of Vanity Fair, right? Because it was Tina, what's her name there, right?
Something Chinese, right? I think, right? Nyberg or something.
No. Tina.
Sarah something. I'm horrible with names. So just
Tina Brown.
I was thinking of someone totally different.
Yeah. I mean, Tina Brown was like a, grand dame of the New York media world. And I think she was Vanity Fair. And then she was Daily Beast. But yeah, let's look at this headline. Mm-hmm. Why did Fox News welcome date rape apologists? This is the phrase. Date rape apologist is in all the media coverage of this story. So it's Lloyd Grove. Do you know Lloyd Grove?
No. Is he a date rape apologist?
No, apparently not. He's a he's a date rape apologist.
Slayer. You
know, scout. Yeah. Slayer. So so Lloyd Grove, which he sounds like a New York media guy, you know. He starts his article, Fox News, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Twitter troll, male-centric. Everyone is, so this is what he says. Everyone is expressing disbelief that male-centric blogger, Twitter troll, and ardent Trump fan Mike Cernovich was booked as a guest. So it wasn't just that, it wasn't anything he said on the show, because on the show he was quite professional and reasonable. Yeah. It was that, it was disbelief that we would book him on the show. Mm-hmm. Now, look at this first quote. "You've got to be kidding me. He's a nutcase," said right-wing author and radio host Ben Shapiro. "Creating any legitimacy to a fringe kook like Mike Cernovich and all the attendant nastiness and problems is close to insane by any cable network." Now, I don't know Ben Shapiro. I kind of like him, you know, but at the time I knew him as a right-wing guy. And I thought, well, now why is Ben Shapiro getting in on this kind of Karening of, or it was a kind of a, this was before Karens, I think.
Yeah.
But I wonder why did he react that way? You've got to be kidding me. You think,
you know, I've been reached for comment before, and there are times where you're just busy. You get asked, "Hey, what's it?" And you just type back. And I mean, I don't know. I think, and my memory is kind of hazy. I assume, and I'm sort of remembering, they must have had some sort of back and forth on Twitter or some sort of spat in the past. And I'm assuming that's kind of what he's responding to, because I just find it hard to believe people are that upset about something that happened at 3 a.m. And I mean, no offense to Red Eye, but it's like, you guys clearly didn't watch the show. So what are you upset about? You're just mad that some guy you don't like got attention.
Yeah. And then Ben Howe. Do you know Ben Howe? He was at Red State.
And then he did the whole, "I'm going to be a principal of the Republican," and then lost his entire audience, basically.
Right. Because I think that's what Red State became, as kind of a softer version of the Lincoln Project, I think.
Well, they had, so I remember it was, we covered it on Bongino Report. There was like a schism a few years back where they lost a number of their like top writers who were anti-Trump, kind of jumped ship. So I think it's mainly pro-Trump people that remain. But there was like a never Trump faction of the site back 4 or 5 years ago, for sure.
Yeah. So Ben Howe says, "Are you serious?" Again, these people really pro-clutching at the, "Are you serious? He was a guest on effing Red Eye. That's giving this mother effer legitimate." You could swear on this podcast, but I prefer not to. But
I won't. Yeah.
But legitimacy. Oh my God! Which I don't even like to say that phrase. But here's the deal. So, again, another guy. So at the time, I guess Cernovich was less well known, but he appears to have been very well known in the right wing community, right?
I think he was in those sort of Milo Yiannopoulos type circles where they definitely were. The thing is, too, like a lot of these people in media, even if they're similar ideologically, they are competitors and that they are sort of going for different factions of the party. So, yeah, I mean, Cernovich, Milo, they're all competitors to the establishment. And, you know, certain people like Milo has, you know, fizzled out and sort of had an obvious shelf life. But there are a lot of the sort of populist elements of the base have definitely stuck around. And I think it's just kind of here to stay.
Yeah. So then there's also, of course, I just want to share this other one because it's kind of funny. Mediaite. Fox News under fire after inviting rape apologist.
Come on. They just, you can always tell too where they cut and pasted the headline or the body from and rearranged three things.
Yeah.
Rape apologist is just the line we're going to see.
Yeah. And so, but the quotes of me, they quoted me. I love this guy. Tom Shalhoub told viewers, I love the hell out of this guy. We're probably going out after the show and have drinks. We didn't end up having drinks.
We really need to go commit date rape.
Yeah.
I mean, that was so absurd.
Really? But yeah, I would not have remembered it that way in that at the time, I thought you were kind of a Red Eye regular, but you had only made your first appearance.
One appearance. And I only got booked for a second time because they accidentally double booked me and I think felt bad. So they didn't cancel the second one. So I was only booked for the one they canceled by accident anyway. So it didn't, you know, it was a bummer when they canceled on me, but I kind of had the thought of like, well, it was sort of a technicality in the first place that I got the opportunity. So maybe God was just kind of making that one a wash, but you know, I've recovered since then.
It is also interesting the way that, because some people kind of come in and then I almost think that, because you mentioned Milo, I'm not sure what he's doing. Maybe you know.
I don't know if Milo knows what he's doing. I know people who've worked with him, and just it seems like he's kind of impossible to work with. And he's just done a lot of things that don't make any sense. Like he's claimed he's like an ex-gay now, but I don't know if I just don't buy it at all. I don't know. He's just kind of all over the place. And I've heard stories that I won't repeat, but.
Yeah.
Only I'll just say that I don't think he's real. There's not going to be really a second coming of his career or anything. I think he kind of had a niche that could exist for a year or two.
Yeah.
But it's just sort of tiresome, you know, after a little while, even though I agree with a lot of it.
Yeah. Well, when he first was on the scene, I suggested him as a guest on Red Eye, and the senior producer took a look at him and said, I don't think so. It just didn't want to book him. So it wasn't any kind of like, you know, there wasn't any controversy. He just didn't. And I said, oh, okay. You know, I was wanting to have on people that I saw as being really on the edge outside that weren't getting media coverage anywhere else. And so that's why I jumped on the Cernovich thing. Yeah. And then of course, then the media jumped on that like crazy. And it was one of my first examples with the, I don't even think we talked about cancel culture at the time, but it was like a piling on. And I think it's interesting that this guy, Lloyd Grove, and then we had that guy over at Mediaite, I think their Rolodex, they go right to the right wingers. You know what I'm saying? Like, because that's what they do. You know, they want to give it legitimacy, and it's like everybody's upset at this.
They can't make it like, you know, Huffington Post is mad because, of course, they're mad. They have to make it seem like it's a right wing outrage. And you know, Ben Shapiro was probably the most mainstream person there. He's a legitimate, authoritative figure, so they were smart to quote him. I just don't know why he gave them the quote. Like I'm of the mindset that, you know, even if there was someone on the right who I don't like, if the media reached out for me for dirt on them, I wouldn't give it just because we're of the same cause. And that's kind of the way I view it, at least. But
That's the other thing is the those phrases that came up a lot were things like why would they grant him legitimacy? Yeah. Why would they give a platform to? And those kind of words or phrases, I'm very opposed to because. I'll give a platform to anybody. I mean, that's the whole thing.
The thing is, too, platforms don't really give legitimacy. I mean, if you put me on a platform, you could put the craziest person on earth on Joe Rogan. He's not going to convert anyone because people can look at it and themselves determine, all right, this is a bit kooky. So it's really, I mean, it's just so middle school. They're just, you know, as we said earlier, they're just upset he got the opportunity. And the excuses of, oh, it's the platform, oh, it's legitimacy. Listen, when there really are crackpots getting airtime, you just make fun of them. And in fact, that it makes our job easier. We would prefer it. And the reason they're not just making fun of us is because they can't. You know, Matt Walsh's documentary, you know, What Would Be a Woman? You can't make fun of the right as being like, you know, these puritanical bunch anymore. It's just they can't offer anything. So I don't know. I think I'm taking too much time to say the obvious. But
But of course, in the end of the story, then, you know, I don't know how much later it was, within 6 months or a year, Cernovich did 60 Minutes. He did a bunch of other things. And he, you know, he handled himself with such dexterity that they couldn't do this kind of cancel thing on him anymore. And so they just gave up and they said, oh, we're not going to, we're not going to try to cancel him. And then that, that rape apologist phrase just went away because, you know, they have to kind of go after him for other reasons, or, you know, I guess they couldn't ignore him anymore. Or, and then all of a sudden it's kind of like, okay, have him on your show.
Well, the rhetoric too, it only works within a niche political sphere. Like if you were trying to explain the situation to someone on the street and you went, yeah, he's a rape apologist, they're going to go, whoa.
Yeah.
This guy's job is to go defend rape. And you're going to go, okay, no, he had a tweet in 2011. And, you know, it's just the language itself is just laughable when you really boil down what they're saying. And it's sad that it works.
Yeah. So let's just kind of do it for people who don't know you, I guess. Mm-hmm. So Bongino Report, like, that's your baby, right? So what do you do?
I post links all day when I read the news. My life is, I wake up at 6 a.m. I post some links. I go for a walk.
Yeah.
I post some links. And then as I prepare for bed, I'll read the news. So I have more links to post in the morning. And it's been the last 3 years of my life or some variant of that with books being written. I should step back. So I, 10 years ago, had to write a 10-page paper for, this is 2010, so this is 13 years ago. I had to write a 10-page paper, which for me, a sophomore year, was a very, very big deal. And I had to write it in the Second Amendment. And it ended up being some like 30-page monstrosity by the end of it, because I just couldn't stop reading.
Yeah.
And then I had this thought of like, hey, there's all these political topics in the world I want to learn about. If I could do this for gun control, why don't I just do the same sort of research I did for this topic to all these other things? And, you know, by the end of a few years, I could even put it into a book and be an expert and get on TV. And I did that. And, you know, it was still another 10 years after that of work before you get on TV and do that stuff. But that was sort of the genesis of it all. So I started self-publishing books, and, you know, Bongino noticed me, I think around 2014 or so. And he was kind of one of the first big people to kind of notice my work and start elevating me. But then I would just do little radio shows here and there. I think Gavin McInnes, I went on in 2015, and he's the one who ended up getting me on Red Eye, I believe. He was the one who pitched me. So Red Eye ended up being the first TV appearance. And ever since Red Eye, I was just kind of doing little odd jobs writing. I mean, I took a job at a bank when I couldn't find employment, but then out of nowhere, I got a call from Bongino while I was sitting at PNC, and he'd said, I'm starting a new company and you're going to run it. And I said, cool, sounds good, and never went back. And been doing that since around the end of 2019, and then just sort of books here and there. People might know me from a book called The Man Behind the Curtain, which is about George Soros and his malfeasance all around the world. But that's pretty much my... I guess 2 minutes or less, what I'm up to.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you about the Soros thing, because I heard you with Candace on her podcast, but the Bongino Report, he said, I'm starting a new company. And this was when, around 2019, you're saying?
It was either November or December of 2019.
Yeah.
Right before the pandemic.
If I'm correct, Bongino kind of swept in like a vulture when Drudge Report kind of went bad, right?
Yes. That was our bad goal. They have an audience. They no longer cater to their own audience. So, you know, if they're not going to, we might as well. But obviously, you know, we haven't dethroned them as we hoped, but we still got, enough to have a website that sustains itself and some staff and all that. So, yeah, it's going pretty well.
Yeah. And what was it with Drudge? I mean, Drudge Report is still Matt Drudge, right?
It seems like it is. I mean, if he sold the site, there would have had to be some NDA where he's not allowed to say it, I guess, on the theory that maybe the name has value. But that's just me speculating. I have no idea. It seems like it's him. I don't know what issue he had the schism with Trump over, but it seemed like that probably some motivation. Him and Trump had some break, and this is his revenge, I guess. But I don't
know. It's not just Trump. I mean, you have people like Ann Coulter, obviously, you know, total split from Trump. Now her entire thing is pointing out, problems with Trump, but she's got a right-wing following.
Drudge went left-wing. Coulter is the anti-Trump from the perspective of he should have been much more right-wing.
Yeah.
His is the perspective of, I'm a, shit-lib now, basically.
Yeah.
I don't know what and I've been asked to speculate on that. It's impossible to really know, but some switch just flicked in the guy's head. So it's either something happened with Trump and that, I don't know, he's rebelling, I guess maybe he just secretly sold the site or just is not overseeing day to day what's going on.
It is true, because you talk about the switch. Once the switch is flipped, you have someone like Bill Kristol, right, who was essentially he was the America's definition of conservatism. Mm-hmm. And then he lost it over Trump. Mm-hmm. And he's now a total left-wing liberal Democrat. Like, there's no policy at all that resembles conservatism with Bill Kristol. And there's a number of people like that who were very, kind of like establishment conservatives. And they went ahead and became, liberal. Really funny.
It proves that the politics is more about power for them than anything else. Because like there is the thing about changing your mind at an issue or changing your ideology. Or I should say, people who change their religions, for instance, or join a new religion.
Yeah.
It's not like something just happens and you go, oh, wow, I believe this now. It's usually just a very gradual learning process of little pieces of evidence that are adding up over time. And over a certain period of time, you go, oh, okay, and I kind of see a new way of seeing things. So if you were a huge Republican and, I don't know, your view on guns gets challenged where, hey, you're a Republican, but you think guns are a bad thing. Well, you're just a Republican who doesn't like guns. You're not a Democrat now. You're a Republican minus one issue. And if you are someone who then changes on 400 other issues overnight, I go, well, that's a little weird. Why would that one issue cause you to change on everything? Like, well, so you're not for low taxes anymore because of the gun issue? Like, these things don't correlate. So whenever people have uncorrelated issues that they all flip on at once, I go, okay, you never believed it. You just wanted power. That's how you did it. And you notice all of the Bush era neocons are now like Stephen Colbert tier Democrats.
Yeah.
And it's whatever faction of the GOP party or GOP they were in was so close to the center it could tip over to the left that really the smallest gust of wind, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Bush is one, the Bush staffers, mm-hmm. but MSNBC is basically their entire lineup was like
Mr. Cole Wallace, right?
Well, yeah, they were staffers for, what's his name there in Arizona?
McCain?
Yeah, McCain.
Yes.
We forgot his name. Is he Arizona? That's what I think.
The Arizona guy.
I forgot his name here, McCain, but McCain's entire staff, it's like Lincoln Project, the MSNBC lineup, so it kind of just shows you the way that things have gone down. And I guess you were there at the outset of all this kind of stuff, right? I mean, that's when you were just coming out of college, the whole world was imploding and everything was getting divided up, and you had Trump and then essentially MAGA, right? Mm-hmm. And everyone acted like it was this big shift. Obviously it was a huge shift in personality because of the way Trump really did things differently according to his bizarre personality that he has, right? But I don't know if MAGA America is that much different from Tea Party, which was pre-Trump. Am I right?
Well, the general sentiment of we have, some greatness in the past that, and there are elements we have to respond to is something that actually kind of both sides will harp on here and there. One thing that reminds me of, and I had this thought because whenever Trump would say, like, make America great again, the left would default to race and say, like, oh, so you mean like back when we had Jim Crow?
Yeah.
And what this came to mind, there was, I probably didn't watch this show. It was horrible. It was called The Newsroom. And in the pilot episode, there was this clip that went viral where Jeff Daniels' character is asked, like, why is America the greatest country in the world?
That
and
video.
And he goes from this insufferable rant. But here's the thing. It's a left-wing Make America Great Again rant because he is giving the left-wing version of these are certain values I think the country had and we should get them back.
Yeah.
And, of course, no liberal would go, oh, so you mean Jim Crow? But, of course, when it's our version of it, then they have to do that. But I only brought that up in that whatever sense that is that Trump tapped into – definitely exists on both sides of the political spectrum. So it can't be like, blamed on race or something like that, like the left loves to, is I guess my point. I feel like I gave such a long answer, I forgot what I was even getting.
I don't even think you give, it's almost like you think you're giving too long answers.
I do.
But I think that's what, podcasts are for, right? People just,
I'm getting too used to the TV format where you have I went from podcast to TV. So I have to unlearn it because I've gotten down to where you have to do it in 4 seconds or else you're out of time.
Yeah. I know. That's what, I mean, it drives me a little crazy. That's what I used to love about Red Eye, was that you had a panel. Most panel shows, hey, let's go to the panel segment. And you have all this, all these talking heads come on. They do one segment. Each person gets like 3.5 words, and then they go to the commercial. And Red Eye was a panel for the entire hour. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know any other show that's like that outside of, you know, the View and the Five, you know, but Red Eye was different guests. So you'd have them on and you'd let them sit there for the whole hour. That's the way I like to do things.
Yeah, Red Eye, I just remember when I was on how quick it went. It just felt like it was over as soon as it started. And I don't, it was weird. I don't remember being nervous or anything. And I still get nervous for shows here and there, but I remember not being nervous at all, which was odd for
Well, I hope it wasn't odd. The reason was Tom Shalhoub. That's the reason. Well, no, because I like to create an environment of just chatting. That's the way that the show was when I watched it. Because Greg, and the reason is this, the stakes were so low. When Greg started the show, it was a aesthetic mess, you know, like it looked like the set looked like your set right now. It was a, like, you know, like they had like a fake brick wall or something that had a red eye. But and I remember thinking, oh boy, this show is a mess. You know, it seems like this guy Gutfeld doesn't even know what camera to look into, but the show is very fun because of that, because it's a late conversation. And now talking to Greg today, he's like, of course I didn't know. He had never done television before. He wanted to like take some TV lessons, and they were like, you're on Monday. Like, they gave him the show.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I remember hearing this story that I guess on the first day of Red Eye, the last guest set a guitar on fire in the studio.
Yeah. Yes.
And then they just assumed the show was going to get canceled, but no one at Fox watched it.
They hadn't seen it. They hadn't seen it. Isn't that funny? Ailes gave him his own show, and then he was like, ah, I'm going to bed. Like, he didn't.
That's great. Good for him.
So your book, I listened to the Candace podcast, and it was interesting to me because Candace didn't seem to know, like, she was being sincere. She wasn't being one of those interviewers who was like, what's going on with this guy?
Yeah.
Like, she didn't seem to know. And I was surprised because he's such a, I don't know, people never stop talking about him, but apparently what she did was she said something about him and she said he was terrible. And then she got this, you know, it was almost like the what we spoke at the top of the show here with Cernovich. She gets all these accounts attacking, oh, you're anti-Semitic or whatever, because she attacked Soros. And I hear that kind of thing all the time. Now, obviously, he is, did I just say Cernovich? I meant Soros.
Yeah, no, you meant Soros. Yeah.
Yeah. Soros is a massively powerful billionaire who, he's one of the most influential people on planet Earth. And then this idea that you're not supposed to attack him, like, it's almost unbelievable, the gall that someone would say, like, oh, you're anti-Semitic, when he's not. I mean, it's George Soros. He is an evil billionaire. Everybody knows that, you know, or even if you don't think he's evil, you know, he's a billionaire who is essentially running the world like something out of like an Austin Powers. Right. Mm-hmm. So you did this book on him and you seem to be surprising Candace with all your information. Did that surprise you that she didn't seem to know as much about him?
You know what? To be honest, I can never tell if they're being rhetorical or not with some of the questions. You would be able to notice better than me. But so I didn't pick up on that, which is interesting. I don't know. I guess I wrote the book, so I shouldn't be surprised. I knew a bit more.
Maybe she was being like, oh, because she was deferring to your expertise. But I wonder if this, because the way you guys were talking back and forth, and it was like the. You know, it was, is this guy, what is he? Is he evil or is he, now I think he's evil. I think he's the classic, you know, evil figure in the world today. But what does that really mean? And I think what it means is, maybe, I'm sure he doesn't think he's evil, but I think he's a globalist. Would you agree with me that George Soros is a globalist? He does hate America because he hates countries. He hates borders. And he has an open society, and he's very open about the fact that he wants to break down borders and run the world out of a kind of billionaire / elitist think tank out of, you know, like Davos or one of these places. He seems to align himself with that very openly. Like, he doesn't like nation states that are powerful. We're the most powerful nation state in the world. Therefore, he wants to end that. So, of course, he wants to ruin America's cities, create chaos, basically tear down the American system in the way that the commies used to as well. When they would say, you know, the commies are coming for America. And then the leftists would say, you're crazy. They're not coming from. Oh, well, of course they were.
Yeah.
Like their stated belief was world communism. We must destroy the capitalist system in the United States. So they had many, many projects at hand where they were trying to ruin America. And now we know that they were doing it and they were in our government and everything else. You know, he is that way, too. I think he almost, I mean, he doesn't come out and say, I'm here to ruin America, but we know he is here to ruin America, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's a quintessential globalist. And there is a pattern where the left, where something awful will be happening that they're doing, and they'll say, like, no, it's not happening. And then once we really pull back the curtain and show it's happening, they reframe the debate to, okay, it's happening, but actually, here's why it's really a good thing. So they'll deny, like, you know, Soros... No, he doesn't fund Black Lives Matter. And then when you show the paper trail, it'll change to, oh, well, so he cares about racial justice and helping people. So it's you can't win either way. And just the fact that he's beyond criticism and that multiple prestigious organizations will all rally to call you an anti-Semite for criticizing him.
Yeah.
The amount of power you need to make it a conspiracy that any criticism of you is a conspiracy is incredible. Like, it proves itself the guy is extremely powerful, because who else has that kind of power where within 3 seconds of criticizing him, the Southern Poverty Law Center and Media Matters and every other group has branded you an anti-Semite.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's even a practicing Jew. So it's a bit weird to, you know, bring that up, that point. One thing, too, I brought up in the Candace interview was that infamous 60 Minutes interview where Soros talks about aiding the Nazis as a kid and you know, helping serving summons to Jews. And I gave the hedge of, you know, he was forced against his will to do this. But however, when speaking about it, didn't seem to care very much when speaking about it. And it was funny that people would claim that we were being anti-Semitic for talking about Soros, but they didn't bring up that part of the interview. So, you know, when we bring up, you know, actions of Soros that themselves could be considered anti-Semitic, they don't bring that up. And in fact, what got Candace in trouble was she asked me a question after that where she said something like, do you think Soros himself was sympathetic to Hitler? Which I thought was a silly question, but I was like, you know, given what he just said, who I think my answer was something along the lines of like, you know, given what he said, who knows, but, you know, probably not. But
yeah.
You know, but my point was he was at, you know, at the best case scenario, helped Nazis against his will, but was extremely insensitive about it. And us criticizing Soros for that was what got reported as being anti-Semitic, but not him actually doing that. So that's just kind of the absurdity in dealing with anything Soros related. And you know, I would just say you kind of have to ignore it. You know, when liberals say we're racist and conservative is like rush to make a list of every black friend they've ever had.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is there is no level of evidence where liberals didn't go, oh, okay, I guess you're not racist. I was wrong.
Yeah.
It's a gotcha. It means nothing.
Yeah. On a similar thing, I remember reading this week, and it may not have happened this week, but I was just reading about, he was a conservative MP and he was forced to, by the Tory party, he's no longer Tory. The Tories got rid of him because he said that the COVID, COVID policy was the worst thing to happen since the Holocaust. Yeah. You know, it's in terms of human rights,
right.
COVID policy was the worst thing to happen since the Holocaust. And if you look at the quotes, it's almost unbelievable the way that everybody, Rishi Sunak or whatever, you know, the fellow who's the
PM.
All of them came out, the Tories, Labour, and the prime minister all came out with statements saying that it was shocking anti-Semitism that he would equate COVID with the Holocaust, when in fact he said it was the worst thing since the Holocaust.
Yeah, so, not he wasn't including it.
Well, he's almost saying he's giving the Holocaust position number one.
Yeah.
So the funny thing is, obviously, he's saying it's, and then they would say it's shocking that he would do this. There's nothing like the Holocaust. It stands apart from all. He said it stands apart. He's saying that it was the Holocaust was the biggest thing of the last century. And then this is in second place.
I'm such a jerk in my head. I'm like, well, technically there's he missed the Cambodian genocide. So you have to have it after that. He missed a few genocides since. So, you know, there's historical criticisms you can make. But yes, they were clearly taking it out of context there.
Yeah. So anyway, now the guy doesn't have to be a tour anymore.
That's good.
He's not. And then everyone was saying, oh, look, this guy, it's good he got fired. And you know who actually said that? The reason I read it was Peter Daszak, the guy, that scientist. He said it's great that he was forced out of office. But Peter Daszak doesn't even seem to realize he wasn't forced out of office. He's an independent now. So he's like cooler than all the rest of them. He's still an MP. Everyone's acting like an idiot.
The Conservative Party is not conservative either in UK. If you actually look at how they vote, their platform, it's basically like Clinton era Democrats in terms of their actual voting.
Well, Rishi Sunak is a Tory, right?
Yes.
So yeah, even the Tories, that's the party of Margaret Thatcher. And of course, that ship has sailed as well.
It's gone. Yeah. Yeah. I have friends who are like UK conservatives and they're all like anti-gun and want the government to run my healthcare. And I'm not on board with that.
The last thing I wanted to talk to you about was something that you kind of, you never really said it, but through your retweets, I noticed something because I've been noticing something lately on social media. I spend most of my time on Twitter and some time on Facebook, but you know, I follow people wherever I can follow them, and most of them end up being on Twitter or you know, X as it is now. But something that I've been noticing lately is that people are engaging in kind of strange talk online. Like instead of giving their opinion, they ask you a question, like, you know, and you retweeted this issue. And I thought, oh, is Matt seeing the same thing as me? Yeah. They're thirsty for clicks. Is that what's happening?
So ever since Elon took over, and I'll be honest, I didn't think Twitter could get worse. And there are ways it's better. But one of the consequences of the whole paying creators is it does incentivize you being a click farm. So you'll know, I've noticed in my feed, it's like the website World Star Hip Hop, where it's just like fight videos. Or like someone will post like a 20-year-old girl giving a dumb opinion and be like, this is why women are done forever. And it's like, I mean, okay, I get her. I agree she has a dumb opinion, but they're not all like this. That, and then things that will be captioned like, why does it seem like this is happening? Why does it, this, like, everything has to be a question so that people will comment and disagree with each other and get more money. But the thing is, too, the monetization isn't even good. Like, you have to be in the top 0.0001% to be making a salary at it, and you have to be really insufferable to do that. So it's just not a great business model.
Yeah, and so people you think are kind of looking. I didn't even see it as an Elon thing. You're thinking because Elon has incentivized by paying people that they're
Get paid based on views and engagement now. So if you get more comments, and then all of their followers will see their comment, which will then show your post. So yeah, it's just it's engagement bait. I mean, you saw this to some extent when ad rates were way higher for websites, where like the whole BuzzFeed era of articles that would be like 12 llamas who are, you know, who want to be giraffes, like just completely absurd articles that shouldn't exist. They kind of had that era of it, but I think we're seeing it now on Twitter. And I don't know. It's very annoying. And then I think, too, they're going to remove blocking. So I can't even block these people anymore, which is what I've been doing.
Oh, yeah. Why? What's I like Elon, and I tend to, you know, kind of I like keeping up with everything he does. And it's sometimes his reasons are funny, and sometimes they're, you know, I don't know, like they're just whatever hits him. I like that he's a very rash individual.
Yeah, me too.
What's his stated reason for not having blocking?
So I don't know what I actually forgot it. I think I know the real reason, and that's that the advertisements on Twitter, there's like, it feels like we're down to three advertisers. We got like CBD gummies, some Cheech and Chong company.
Oh, Cheech and Chong's unbelievable.
Yeah, that's all I see. So if you block those three accounts, you never see advertisements on Twitter anymore. So all you got to do to get rid of ads is block, like, you know, the only few people that are advertising. So I'm assuming that everyone's just doing that, so they can't generate ad revenue because it's so easy to block every advertiser.
Yeah,
that's just my theory, but it makes the most sense. That's what I've been doing.
Yeah. I mean, it does happen with I'm on Instagram as well. I tend to put the Joe Biden videos on Instagram. Mm-hmm. I should probably do them on Twitter as well, but I've got to get a little more savvy about the way I do online things. I don't like to think about it very much, you know, because the whole thing's rather annoying, but I'm sure I could be better at posting things. But I definitely have noticed that it's do you know those brothers, the Krasenstein brothers?
I don't know if they're for real or not.
I don't know. they don't seem like actual human beings. They almost seem like an AI created annoying.
Well, they ran one of their side hustles years ago was a real estate business. And if you read through their promotional materials, one of the people they promote as a brilliant real estate developer we should learn from is Donald Trump.
Really?
Really?
That's funny because they're Democrats, but then they love playing this. You know, we're centrists. We're just like, but a lot of that centrist thing to me, it's like a clickbait because they're the kings of, you know, what do you guys think? Like, here's the situation. What do you guys think? Mm-hmm. And it's just so fake. And you know, they're not interested in your opinion. These guys are like weird, like marketing guys or whatever. But, you know, I just don't trust brothers. Like when anyone who's a brother, like, you know, my brother and I, we have a great relationship, but I can't imagine being like an online buddy with my brother. And being like the brothers, you know, whenever I see brothers acting together and oftentimes they're twins. So it gives them a kind of a spooky look. Are the Krasenstein brothers twins?
I think they are. They look like twins. Yeah.
Yeah. But anytime I see twin brothers doing anything, it seems a little weird to me.
Yeah.
I don't trust them. I don't mind like sisters. It seems fun. Oh, the sisters, we're doing our thing.
It's more wholesome. The brothers, it's just something weird about it.
It's something weird. Yeah. 'Cause to me, I don't know. It's like a guy thing. Like I don't know, doing things with your
brother. Your own way and building on your own. And I definitely see that.
Yeah. So I'm against brothers.
And you're right. You're dead on in their case. They're brothers and they're not great. So.
Yes. Yeah. So Matt, that is a great conversation. Thanks for joining me. I think we did it. I think we did what was needed to be done. What do you think of the length of this podcast? I'm generally like a 30 to 45 minute guy. Even though the podcasts I love, like I love Rogan, I love these long, long podcasts, but I don't know, it doesn't match my personality. I don't like, you know, really short, like I said, soundbite kind of talk. But for me, I feel like, you know, it's like with stand-up, you know, it's 45 minutes, maybe an hour with a headliner, but I don't like that, you know, 90 minutes is too long for me.
30 to 40 is ideal for me. If it's a longer podcast, I know this is so embarrassing to admit, I need the timestamps. And people do this. There's always one guy in the YouTube comments who will timestamp in a podcast every single thing that's talked about.
Oh, yeah.
You can click like, you know, 38 minutes in and it'll say what they're talking about. So I like when I can bounce around like that.
Yeah.
But if maybe, not, like 20 to 40, actually 20 to 40 is probably, or maybe 30 to 40, it should be, I have a below average attention span though. So,
yeah. But. Well, this is, you know, people think that online content is short attention span. That's the whole idea. You know, oh, we're in a snap world. We're like TikTok. But Rogan proved that wrong. You know, and you know, even guys like Marc Maron, people love long interviews. And that's so the short attention span thing, I think it's totally false. But for me,
it's true, unfortunately.
It is. Yeah. Well, for me, 40 minutes is probably the tops of where we're going to go. We're kind of getting around 40 minutes now. And I may learn how to do that chapter feature because I would say this would be for me, the Cernovich incident would be chapter one.
Yep.
And then George Soros would be two. And then, you know, our twin brother's evil would be chapter three. So very good. Okay, Matt, we'll do this again. Maybe we'll have a regular feature where we'll have you update us in your because you're very in touch with the extreme right.
Yeah. I got contacts everywhere. and are you still doing the Saturday Night Show?
Yes. In fact,
all right.
They rotate people on the Fox News Saturday Night Show. I'd actually like to have you on my panel.
That would be good.
But what they do is like everything on Fox, they all make us kind of, you know, they move the hosts around, you know, so it's constantly like, you know, you're always auditioning on Fox.
Okay.
How'd I do this week? You know?
All right. Well, if there's any way they could put both of us on, like guarantee it's us. It would be a cool red eye throwback.
Certainly. And then, you know, I had Mike Baker.
I remember him.
And that was a great episode. And you know who was on the Cernovich episode? Mike Baker. It was Mike Baker. It was Cernovich. It was, I can't remember the third person, but then Joanne. But anyway, those were the days.
Those were.
All right, Matt.
Or we're still on. All right. I thought we were off for a second.
No, no. We'll, all you right, know.
We're all good.
I like having sloppy beginnings and sloppy endings. It is an ode to the man who got me into the media business, Greg Gutfeld.
Excellent.
Thanks a lot. We'll see you later.
Thanks.
Bye.